This is CliffCentral.com.
I see ENCA already running with a headline, Trump's misleading tweets.
Well, it took them about 30 minutes to try to spin that because they started out by just showing the tweets, and now it's like, oh, what can we do?
Well, let's talk to our guest this morning about this because I think he might have an opinion or two. He's a very opinionated human being. He's a publisher of many cartoons. He draws for a living, and they're terrific from an artistic point of view and sometimes very controversial from an intellectual point of view. But it's a pleasure to have Jeremy Nell, Germ, in the studio with us now. How are you doing, dude?
I'm well. How are you?
Yeah, nice to see you. So just before we even get stuck into your career and what you're doing at the moment and where you're at, I see ENCA running with the headline, Trump's misleading tweets.
Misleading.
So how is this tweet misleading?
I don't get it because the ANC said they want to take land.
Yeah.
Trump has responded saying that we must keep an eye on this. Now the ENCA is saying it's misleading. What part of it is misleading?
In fact, the ANC is doing what it's saying, right? So there's some kind of integrity there. They've made a policy and now they're going to follow through with it. That's what the president of South Africa said. So Trump's responding to that. How is he misleading them?
Well, I guess because it's Trump. So anything Trump says is misleading.
All right. So you get into a lot of trouble because you've got very outspoken views on certain things. You're in the business of doing outspoken. Mm. Cartoonists have been in this business longer than anyone else. Before there was a Twitter outcry about anything, before people were hollering and screaming in Parliament, before people had a forum to address the major social issues, there were people like you drawing cartoons.
On paper with ink.
Hundreds of years. Back, if thousands of years. The ancient Egyptians knew about this stuff. They would probably criticize their pharaoh with like rude hieroglyphs.
Well, they did.
They did?
They drew on the walls.
Yeah, well, that wasn't even graffiti. That was like in temples. So why is it, do you think, that in so many places in the world, cartoonists are both opinion leaders and sometimes a source of huge concern for people who are appropriating power?
I think we've become the traditional court jester. So from the days of old where you would have an entertainer, mm-hmm, who would be in the courts of the king, mm-hmm, now we have cartoonists who do pretty much the same thing, and comedians. We kind of fill that space. But it's not as if the space is created for us or we create a space. We just do what we enjoy, and it just happens to be in that sort of court jester space. But I think it's also pretty important in the sense that we are a thermometer. We kind of gauge the democratic zeitgeist. Mm-hmm. And you can see that the amount of outrage that gets triggered by, let's say, a cartoon. I mean, at the end of the day, right, if you break it down, it's just a drawing on a piece of paper or on a screen, and that's it. It can do nothing.
Well, I mean, you remember those Muhammad cartoons?
From Denmark.
Yeah, Jyllands Posten.
Yeah.
And they had to shut down that newspaper for some time. There were attacks on embassies across the world. Denmark became the focus of mobs, of people who were pissed off about a drawing. And I often wonder about what's going on there, what's really going on there, because if people are annoyed, I mean, a drawing's not going, no one dies from a drawing.
No. Or from words.
No one loses their job from a drawing, except the cartoonists sometimes.
Yeah. Or they lose their life, as we saw in France.
Correct, at Charlie Hebdo.
Yeah.
But it seems to me that the reaction on the other side, if you do a cartoon that is like those Muhammad cartoons, offensive to some people, the reaction from that side is completely out of scale with the amount of danger a cartoon could possibly create. What do you think that is? That must mean that you guys, you cartoonists, are supremely powerful. It must mean that you have
we're
extraordinary.
Like,
you're like Thor in the Avengers.
And what blows my mind is that we're not at all powerful. All we're doing is just drawing a picture. It's the people that for some weird reason decide that this is now going to really, really influence them and impact their thinking. I think it's because they don't have anything better to do. I mean, honestly think that people don't have anything better to do.
It's because of unemployment and boredom.
Boredom, yeah. Wait until there's a tsunami or some sort of invasion, military invasion. Suddenly cartoons don't matter. People don't get outraged by that anymore. You know, suddenly they come together on another level.
So we've become soft, in other words.
Very soft.
And people who would get upset about a cartoon wouldn't be upset about a cartoon if bigger things are happening in their lives.
Also, Gareth, I don't draw with the intent to offend.
That's important because people will often say, if you do what you do or if I do what I do, or in the case of, you know, the Charlie Hebdo guys, for example, that we're doing that in order to piss people off, that we're going out with the intention to be malicious. Are you saying that's not what you do at all?
No, I don't have that intention. I don't go, what am I going to do today that's going to really rile up some feathers? No, I don't do that.
Promise?
Well, for the most part.
Yeah. Occasionally you do. Occasionally. Just to self-indulge little bit.
Yeah, sometimes. But I mean, for the most part, it's a cartoon in the political sense, I mean, in the satirical political sense, that is, because of course you get variations of satire. It's mostly just about reacting or responding to something. So now you've got Trump tweeting about land expropriation. Now, naturally, there'll be cartoons coming out about that. It's a reaction. Sometimes the cartoons will be preemptive. For example, I did a cartoon March 2016, which was 8 months ahead of the US election, in which I predicted that Trump was going to win.
You're like The Simpsons.
Yeah.
Okay.
No, but I mean, for the most part, cartoons are reactive. And you don't go to the drawing board thinking I'm going to try and offend, because that I think is the wrong motivation.
So with you, you're in Johannesburg at the moment. Do you have all your materials with you so you can draw? You're drawing cartoons today?
Yes. Yeah.
So you'll be reacting to today.
Most likely, I'll be doing something about this tweet. Yeah.
How many do you do a day?
Ah, great question. So in 2016, it's kind of a benchmark year, and I'll come to that just now. It's a very important year in my career. I was doing about 3 cartoons per week, which is somewhat average for a political cartoonist in this country.
And can you earn a good enough living from doing 3 cartoons a week?
You can. I mean, there are cartoonists whose names begin with Z who only do maybe 1 or 2 per week and earn a decent living.
Mm-hmm. As a pirer.
Yeah. But I was doing about 3 per week then. I'm now doing about 3 per day.
Yeah.
And I'm not even in the mainstream anymore. I'm kind of more in the alternative space. And it's ironic because you would think that I've removed myself from the mainstream.
What do you mean the alternative space? What is that?
Well, that's a whole discussion on its own. Okay, so there's the mainstream, which I think is fairly obvious.
These the major publications
you're talking about? Yes, that would be mainstream,
This would be big newspapers like the Sunday Times, those kinds of things.
Yes, so I've deliberately removed myself from most of that.
You deliberately moved, in other words, you weren't like never offered a job by them or fired by them?
I was fired, yeah.
By whom?
Well, I was fired by the New Age. That was in 2012.
So you worked for the Guptas?
For 2 years, yes. And I won
That's
two.
That's about as alternative as it gets.
And I won 2 awards while working for them. I think I was the only contributor to that newspaper that won any awards, and those are the I won the Vodacom Journalist of the Year, provincial and national.
Did they ever tell you what the circulation of the New Age newspaper was? Because the only place I ever saw it was when they gave it to us for free on SAA flights.
I didn't know the circulation, but those numbers were doctored anyway. Whatever numbers they gave out were doctored. Everything that they did was doctored, and I can say this now because the newspaper's folded. But I mean, it was a great experience. I actually really did enjoy working.
Did you have interesting people there? I mean, who did you report? Who did you hand in your cartoons to?
That's a good question. It was very much it's like dark hole because people kept on changing. Right. I had 4 editors in 2 years, which is insane.
Wow.
Nobody has 4 editors in 2 years. They kept on being removed and changing position, and the whole place was not static.
Okay, so how did they eventually fire you? What did they fire you over?
Because I was too critical of the president.
Ah, in the New Age newspaper.
Yeah, can you believe that? Hey,
but for a long time you were doing okay there.
Yeah. Okay. So let me quickly. Let me say this quickly. Hang on. Working for the New Age was great in the sense that it forced me to be creative within a whole new parameter.
Uh-huh.
In other words, I didn't ever bend. I didn't do stuff that I was not happy to do. I would still look at those cartoons
and,
today.
And mostly they gave you free rein.
Mostly, yes, because they knew that they were being nailed.
Yeah, you see, a lot of people don't understand that because when I was at the SABC, they very seldom got involved in editorial. Like, yeah. I could pretty much do and say what I liked. The only time they got involved was when I wanted to interview Julius Malema, and they said no before the elections. And that was one of the reasons I decided to leave, because I thought, you know, you're getting... You're
Why did they say no?
Because they didn't want Julius. He just started the EFF.
Oh.
And the SABC is notoriously partisan and are told what to do by the government. So clearly, up to that, I was allowed to do anything. And then when I crossed that line, it suddenly became impossible. So the similar situation has to happen.
Well, what happened, so when I left the New Age in 2012, then, I mean, I was fired. I was also sort of fired, I guess, from ENCA. I was with them for a year.
Now, how do you do cartoons for ENCA? Because they're a TV channel.
Yeah, but okay,
for their
so
website.
This, yeah, so this was very interesting because EWN and I worked together after the New Age, and they're a radio station or radio platform, and we thought, well, let's use social media and their website as the outlet.
Mm-hmm.
Phenomenally successful model.
Okay.
And ENCA copied that model as well, and now they both do cartoons.
Okay.
And they rotate their cartoonists as well.
A cartoon is no different to a column. It's expressing.
But I want to say my claim to fame is I almost single-handedly created those positions at EWN and ENCA, which now have multiple cartoonists. So,
well, there we go. You've created more employment for your fellow cartoonists, but you don't work with any of them anymore.
No, I don't. No.
All right. So, you were saying alternative and mainstream.
Yes.
I think we have a good idea now of what you mean. But how many cartoons are you doing now as opposed to the three week you were doing in 2016?
Yeah, so I'm doing about 3 to 4 per day now.
Jesus.
And
how do you find the time? That's a lot of work because you do them in color.
Yeah, no, I'm always behind. Always. I'm always trailing in my work. I'm always shifting deadlines and things. Look, it's a good problem to have.
So you're earning more money now than you did in 2016?
Definitely.
Do you...
And I'm more underground in a weird kind of sense.
Yeah, well, I mean, you said it yourself. You're not in the mainstream anymore. So your career, and you mentioned 2016 was a pivotal year for you in your career. Is that for the reasons you've already outlined, or are there other things?
So in 2016, in a sense, so to speak, I came out. I decided that I was no longer going to try and be this balanced satirist.
Balanced in inverted commas.
Yeah. In other words, I was always trying to be fair and always trying to play both sides of the fence. And I thought, you know what? I'm done with this now. I actually have a set of values or principles on which I'm grounding my worldview. And instead of trying to be mysterious and nuanced, I'm actually just going to take a side. I'm going to do something that's probably not good because then I become partisan. But I'm actually happier.
All right, so basically standing by your actual principles and having an opinion, a personal opinion in these things, hasn't hurt you, it's helped you.
It's helped me, but it was quite scary in the beginning.
Tell me about that.
Well, because if you have an opinion, people start hating you a lot more than well, you also get a lot... Look, people get divided. So if you are very middle ground and on the fence, then you can kind of try and win as many people as you can, and you can kind of, you can play with words and you can get around everything. If you have a strong opinion, you're going to get people who like you and you're going to get people who dislike you, and that middle ground becomes much smaller. It becomes more extreme. Does that make sense?
It does. It makes a lot of sense. How do you find...
If I say I'm glad that Donald Trump won, that's a lot more blatant than... Yeah, well, you know...
let's do a Hillary cartoon this week. We'll do a Donald one next week.
Yeah.
I got you.
But I am glad that Trump won, and I think that he would... You know, he was a much better choice than Hillary.
You think she's going to jail like some people do?
I don't know.
Are you going to say lock her up in one of your cartoons?
maybe. I mean, if she's done wrong stuff, which she definitely has, but she's too powerful. And I mean, look, the thing is, I also didn't want her to become president because she was already the president for 2 terms in the 90s.
What, you mean when Bill was president?
Yeah, Bill, inverted commas.
Oh, all right. So you're basically saying, you're saying that Hillary's already very powerful. We don't need to,
She definitely wears the pants.
Okay. All right, you think so? So that is such a misandrist comment. People get accused of being misogynists all the time. I'm accusing you of being a misandrist. All right. Let's talk about your place in the South African cartoon world, because there are cartoonists. Oof. They sometimes talk to each other.
Yes, yes.
How do they feel about you? How do you feel about other cartoonists? Don't feel scared to mention names. This will be interesting.
Okay, well, I'm very disliked by the cartoonist fraternity. So
it's, why, because you've got a douchey attitude?
Well, that's funny, though, because I actually... I think I'm the most honest cartoonist, actually.
Well, you think you are, but they'll probably say they are.
Yes.
What are their complaints about you? Why don't they like you?
Well, I'm alt-right, I'm right-wing, I'm racist, I'm sexist, I'm homophobic, I am Islamophobic. What's some of the names? Ugh, I love all the labels. And that's been... Look, most cartoonists in the country are very self-admittedly left-wing, okay? And what I've found is a correlation between... Sorry, I'm spitting on your microphone.
No, thanks very much. I have to disinfect the goddamn thing.
Between being left-wing...
You're slavering at the chops, yeah? Will you go and get that spray of mine, please?
We need the disinfectant ASAP.
Yeah?
Yeah, I was trying not to laugh. But there's a correlation between left-wing and insulting people. And that's all I get from the majority of the cartoonists. And this includes, maybe not so much Sapir anymore.
You said there's a correlation between people who are left and the amount of insulting
yes,
they do.
I've noticed that, definitely.
Oh, right. So this is just anecdotal on your part.
Yeah, I'm making up that. There's no real evidence.
But if we have a lot of left-leaning cartoonists, doesn't it stand to reason that a smart person would do right-leaning cartoons if they wanted lots more work? Because... there'll be a demand for the things you can't get. If there are 20 cartoonists doing left cartoons,
yes,
and there's only one doing,
which is
inverted commas, right cartoons,
yeah,
then that guy on the right's going to be making a lot more money than the 20 people fighting for space on the left.
You would think so, but cartoonists tend not to be very logical,
okay,
in my experience, and I know pretty much most of them.
So they don't like you?
No, they don't like me. And I'm not being metaphorical. We literally were in a WhatsApp group.
Okay. Oh, you had a cartoonist WhatsApp group?
An actual WhatsApp group, yes.
It's been hilarious. Did you guys post your work on there? When you were still on it?
I've been pretty much kicked off, yes. In fact, Zapier himself said he didn't want to partake in the WhatsApp group while I was in the group.
Oh, wow. So they boycotted you, basically.
To some degree, yes. And it started off with me apparently trolling by asking the question... please define, or can you define, racism? Because it's a term that gets bandied about. And yeah. I said, okay, guys, so that we're on the same page, can we just all agree or disagree on the definition?
It's like a board meeting of cartoonists. Can you
I just
imagine?
Wanted to know, because they're very quick to label me a racist.
Yeah. Of it all.
And how about this? They all refused to answer the question. At point blank refused to answer, and they said, we think that you're a racist, but we're not going to tell you why.
We're not going to tell you what that is.
And then there are a bunch of white cartoonists who go and say, well, why don't you take your work into a township and go and show your work there? I mean, how condescending is that? Now, I've got enough black fans to say you're not a racist and your work is just coming from a different angle, okay?
But the label sticks,
yeah.
So let me just understand.
And then, as you might know, I try to... get this into the public sphere and say, look, Zapiro, let's have a debate. Let's talk about these ideas.
Won't do it?
No, he won't do it. No, his words were, I'll rather soft my arm.
But don't, I mean, you respect Zapiro. The guy is, he's an internationally renowned cartoonist.
He's an amazing cartoonist.
He's one of South Africa's shining stars. He publishes tons of really high quality work.
He's a fantastic cartoonist.
His books have sold. So yeah. you respect him.
Of course I do. Of course I do. And in fact, I'm very friendly with him. Just on a professional level, I don't agree with a lot of his opinions.
Oh, okay. So this is classic personal, professional differences.
Yeah. I'm,
in other words, you can
I don't dislike anyone.
You can disagree with someone, but you don't hate them.
Absolutely. 100%. They will dislike me. Mm. But I don't have issues. I don't have issues
who
with
else,
them.
Who else are the big names in cartoons?
No, no. You answer that because I can. Because to me, no, this is because I know the names, but I don't know who's big because I know them.
See, this is the problem. I don't know. I mean,
yeah.
It used to be that newspapers were the major source of information for everybody.
They're not anymore.
Yeah, we used to go to newspapers when we wanted to find out what was happening in the world, when we wanted to inform ourselves. It used to be the place, and there would be different kinds of newspapers, just like there are different kinds of cartoons or different kinds of radio shows or different kinds of television programs. Yeah. And if you liked a more conservative government style, you probably have read The Citizen once. If you liked a more
it's a good newspaper.
Independent, let's say, slightly more liberal Democrat look at the world, you would have gone with what was, at that stage, independent newspapers and their various types.
And if you want fake news, you go to Mail and Guardian.
Yeah.
Sorry, did I say that out loud?
or the Huffington Compost, which doesn't exist anymore.
Or News 24. No, sorry.
No, well, exactly. Now, So here we are. Now we don't know. And this is why cartoonists used to be like massive celebrities, and some of them still are, and some of them are bigger celebrities now.
I have a great story about the Mail and Guardian.
Okay, we'll talk about that in a second. But I'm trying to zero in on like what the what it looks like from the inside. On this WhatsApp group, who are South Africa's most prolific cartoonists?
All right,
let me put it that way.
Okay, so you have a bunch of cartoonists who are good, but are unknown. So Sewelo draws, I think it's... Is it for this... I forget now. It's either the Citizen... I don't know, but it's a Gauteng paper.
All right.
Great cartoonist, in my opinion.
Sewelo.
Sewela.
Sewela.
Okay. Great cartoonist, but...
Not very well known.
No, and he's not outspoken. In fact, most cartoonists are very introverted. They all are hermits.
See, because you guys also have... Sorry to interrupt.
No, it's fine.
But it's also art, right?
It's art, yeah.
So some people, every work that you do is a masterpiece.
And I specifically put a lot of effort now into my work because I really believe in it.
So you don't just churn it out because you need to meet a deadline. Because, I mean, some cartoonists, you could see they've gone to enormous trouble. And they've some of them are realists, some of them are impressionists, some of them
I can't draw.
Every kind of artist. No, that's obviously crap.
that's my claim to fame.
But you can get caught up in that too, and you can get so immersed in creating one cartoon that it could really occupy a huge amount of your time. And then
cartoon bombs.
And you become unproductive as a result. Mm. So I'm curious about where you walk that line.
Okay, I can tell you about that. So I used to draw on ink and paper, and that takes a long time no matter what you do. And you've got to scan and all that.
Yeah, when I spoke to Zapiro, he told me he does that.
Yeah, and but now he colors in Photoshop.
Okay. Well, you've got to move on.
Yeah, right. I now work completely digitally. It's the difference between a photographer who works digitally and with old film.
So you don't have pens and paper and
I don't
stuff.
Anymore, no.
Okay.
I used to, but look...
What sort of programs do you use?
Yeah, mostly Photoshop. But really? I use drawing tablets.
Okay, so you draw it with your hand.
Yes, I'm physically drawing. I'm just doing it digitally.
I'm not criticizing. Just trying to work.
You're welcome to. I will defend it. I love it. I do it because I love it, not because it's faster. It is faster, but I really enjoy it because I can be more mobile. The ease at which I can work is amazing. I can work right here in your studio. Mm-hmm. I can work in Neisner. I can work anywhere. I can work in Germany.
Well, if you're doing 3 to 4 cartoons a day, you need to, right?
Mm.
So to go back to the question, you mentioned this Sewela, right?
Yeah.
So
it's Dr. Jack, who I think is probably one of the best cartoonists in the country.
So these are people who are doing amazing work, but they're not necessarily famous.
Well, Dr. cartoons. Jack draws for EWN, okay. and he's part of a duo. Mm-hmm. So it's him and a guy called Curtis. Mm-hmm. Curtis writes the cartoons and Jack draws them.
Okay.
And that's for EWN.
That's like Goscinny and Uderzo.
Yeah, for Asterix. Yeah. And it works very well. John Curtis is his full name, is a great writer. He's got incredibly good ideas. Now, he doesn't like me at all. And in fact, he's the one...
Are there any of the cartoonists that do like you, that you get along with?
Well, he's actually deliberately misinterpreted my cartoons to make me out to be a racist. Deliberately. So I've had arguments with him about that. But I don't dislike him. I think he's a fantastic writer, and I think he's a very good cartoonist per se. Jack, for me, is an incredibly brilliant artist. I mean, he's just... If you look at his work, it's just beautifully drawn. It really is just gorgeous. It looks like the old school Mad Magazine style artwork.
Wow.
Yeah, it's wonderful stuff. I'll never be able to draw like that in my lifetime. But he loves it, and you can see it. There are cartoonists who just churn out because they're happy just to earn an income. And that, for me, is understandable.
Sure, it's a business.
But they're the kind of guys who keep a low profile as well.
It's like some days, I suppose, people who listen to me might think I'm crap. Some days I am. You can't always get it right. Are you able to identify when you've...
Yes.
When you've misstepped?
You
either look at it and criticize it from a work point of view. You're like, well, this isn't the greatest cartoon, actually.
Yeah.
Or from a content point of view.
Definitely. And remember, I mean, if I'm drawing constantly, I have to sometimes switch off from my emotions, because if you have a fight with your partner or someone dies and then you still have to put out something that's entertaining or funny, you're going to struggle.
Yeah.
And a lot of the time, political satire is not funny either. Right. It's actually very angry.
It's taxing.
Yeah, and angry and vicious and violent. And you're just trying to make a point as well. Like, I really disagree with... I mean, there's very little funny about land expropriation. So very few of my EWC cartoons are going to be funny, because they're coming from a place of anger and absolute, you know, opposition.
All right, well, let's talk about where you have been featured. So you've worked in countries like the US, Britain, Belgium, France, Germany, Netherlands, Namibia, India. You've drawn for the Sunday Times, the Star, City Press, Report, Bild, The Times, FHM, Playboy, Rolling Stone, Daily Maverick. I mean, that's an incredible list of publishers.
Yeah.
Some of your work has been syndicated by the New York Times.
Correct, yes.
And who are your major influences? Like, who do you look up to in the world of cartoons? Internationally, who are the people who you think are just spectacular and might have got you interested in this when you were young?
Well, Wikipedia has it wrong, and I've tried changing it, but they keep putting back the incorrect information. So Wikipedia will say that my biggest influences are Zapiro and Quentin Blake. Do you remember Quentin Blake? He used to draw for all Roald Dahls.
That's where I know it from.
The BFG. And
yeah, he did all the drawings in the Roald Dahl.
Yes, I love him. Yes, I love him. Yeah. Now, his work is magnificent, and he's a huge influence.
Witches.
Yeah. Now, Zapiro's work is influential, but not now, because I've moved into my own style of work. I mean, if we're talking from an artistic point of view.
Right, sure.
But I'm more influenced by commentary and humor, and so Peter Sellers, for example, is one of my heroes. Yeah.
Who do you get? Because some days you must just hit.
And dare I say, Bill Cosby in his former years?
Shit. Yeah, you could, but you're going to be quite lonely in that world.
But he was a phenomenal comedian, and I loved how he. Let's talk about his early years just quickly.
Where Noah went into the ark.
He was great because he didn't swear on stage, and I loved that. He was a gentleman comedian, if that made sense.
Well, not behind the scenes.
Yeah, no, not behind the scenes.
I'm always a little nervous about gentlemen anything, because they end up being real creeps when you take away the gentleman title.
And Richard Pryor.
Richard Pryor, okay, there we're
phenomenal.
Agreeing. Yeah, we're in complete agreement. So, okay, let's just go back to this discussion around your influences, because I would imagine that some days you hit a blank. Some days you're like, well, I think I've done a couple of cartoons on the land issue. I've done a couple of cartoons on corruption. I'm bored with that now. I'm tired of it. I can do it, but it's not going to be great. What do you do then? Where do you go for your inspiration?
Well, I don't know. There's no formula. I've often been asked that, and I can't tell you the answer, actually. It's just a case of then I sit back and I go, okay, well, what's actually on my mind? For the most part, the people with whom I work don't influence the direction of my work, for the most part.
And they don't say, oh, you know, Jeremy, we need a cartoon about...
sometimes. Yeah, sometimes.
You know, this politician's love affair or whatever.
Yeah, sometimes. But for the most part, they leave me alone because, I mean, I've drawn nearly 7,000 cartoons and I've got experience now, and so I kind of know where I'm going and what I'm doing.
7,000 cartoons?
It's difficult to tell you exactly how many, but it's between 6,000 and 7,000, yeah.
Hmm.
Yeah, but for the most part, I don't get told what to draw. So when I hit a blank, I honestly maybe just get up and go to the shop or go for a drive or go in the garden, or maybe not the garden so much. But I don't know. I just try and do something just to get my mind off it and then come back to it.
Well, we're not going to hold it against you, but you're from Cape Town. Yes. Do you love living in the Cape? Are you
happy
there? I love the Cape.
You're very happy.
You could be a cartoonist anywhere in the world, right?
Listen, it took me 2 hours to get to your studio. This doesn't happen in Cape Town.
Oh, man. I'm just looking at some of the other things that I've got here about you. You've won a number of awards. You mentioned the two that you got when you were at the New Age.
The weirdest award I ever got, or accolade, was coming, second in Men's Health Most Inspirational Men. I have no idea how that happened.
Wow.
I have no idea how that happened, and they came and did a photo shoot with me. I don't know how that happened.
Men's Health?
Men's Health
Most Inspirational Men.
And I came, there were 20, and I was number 2, and I have no idea how that happened. I don't know anyone there.
Who was first?
I don't know. I can't remember. I'm not even well-built or anything. I don't even
have that would be the byline in your story.
Men's Health, you'd think you were being, you know, acknowledged for your looks.
Well, yeah, you would think so.
Didn't happen. What do you think the next couple of months are going to give you in terms of material? What are you excited about? Because you get to take big ideas and complicated situations and political shenanigans and turn them into a single tableau that really reflects back at us who we often are.
I'm not really excited. No. It's not a very happy space that we're in at the moment.
No.
But I mean, there's lots of work, thankfully, but I'm not excited about it. It's not the kind of work that I want to continue. I mean, if land gets taken and I'm doing work based around that, that's not exactly the most inspirational, or the most motivating work to do. Although, I mean, it's very serious, and I'm glad that I'm somehow earning money from something that's so terrible.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think it's exciting. But on the other hand, it's fairly easy material because I've got lots of opinions on it. And so that certainly makes a great writing opportunities. When news is very boring, then it's very difficult to do cartoons. And
so
in
you
actual,
think it's harder to be a cartoonist in Canada, for example?
Very hard, yes.
What are they even
But that's
doing?
Why most American
What are they doing cartoons?
Most American cartoonists have got maybe two or three topics at most. It's the president, it's maybe Obamacare or former Obamacare, and one other topic.
Very, very good. All right, listen, I wanted to ask you one other thing.
Yeah.
With cartoons going online, with stuff becoming digital instead of being printed in a newspaper, does that change the way you have to put things together?
Yes.
Explain.
Well, in a newspaper, you are literally restricted by the printing press. So if you get your color format wrong, then the colors get printed wrong.
Okay.
And also remember, and it's never a good print. Newspapers are terrible quality.
Because they make so many of them in its
own. Yeah, and that's why cartoonists or cartoons have traditionally been black and white. Because once you start adding color, it doesn't look very good for the most part. The great thing about online or digital is that you can do any format you want. You can even animate, you can add sound, you can make it upright, you can make it a square. It doesn't matter what you do, you can do whatever you want. It's you have an infinite canvas and an infinite palette. I love online, and I will never go exclusive to print ever again. I mean, I am in print now.
Yeah, you do some of that. Do you sell some of your cartoons? Like,
yeah.
Can people buy them?
Yeah, I can. I mean, I sell canvas prints. No, well, I don't have an original.
Because you do it digitally.
Yeah, so, I mean, that's a whole discussion on its own. Like, what defines an original?
Yeah.
I mean, there is an original drawing that I did.
Sure.
But it's a digital drawing, so you can't. So you can buy it on a flash drive, but you can't buy the physical.
But that's exactly the same thing. It's like if a song is on an MP3. It still belongs to the artist.
Yeah, it belongs to me, yeah. But, I mean, I sell canvas prints and that kind of thing. But I've got two books. The money is not really there. Those are just things you do for archival purposes. But and it's because it looks nice. But I mean,
I suppose it's a positioning statement or something. All right, marketing.
Mm.
Well, thank you, man. Always good to see you. Lovely to spend a bit of time and actually get to know you, hear a little bit about the career, the controversies, all the rest of it. May you keep being controversial.
Thanks, Gareth. And you too.
And you know what I hope happens? More and more firings happen so that we can keep getting better.
That's a very good point. Yes, I agree with that.
Do you reckon that because you're not safe and secure in a mainstream media situation, you've been forced to up your game?
Definitely, and I'm certainly more free also. I'm more independent now than I've ever been, which is a beautiful, beautiful place to be.
Well, congratulations then. I think that's probably enviable. Many of those cartoonists who are still in the WhatsApp group that you're not on anymore, who are probably a little bit jealous.
Oh, I know what's going on there, though.
You do?
I've got my little birdies.
All right, well, thank you very much. Jeremy Nell, Germ. You can find him all over the place. Okay, let's do some un-news and wrap it up for this morning. Here it is. Donald Trump is suddenly really interested in South Africa's policy of taking land without compensation. He has asked his Secretary of Social Media to find out what's going on here and if he can do the same to Canada and parts of Mexico. The coastal resorts, of course, not the shithole parts. In other news, Dudizane Zuma is back in South Africa for his culpable homicide case. But actually, he's just back for some cooler weather. It's very hot in Dubai at the moment, uncomfortably so, in fact. So this court case is just a nice excuse to enjoy some downtime before heading back to the main winter season from October. Oh, and he also needs to maintain his side chick action in South Africa. Phil Mickelson has just got onto Twitter. It was quite a discovery for him as he went from thinking people like him, to seeing people actively hate him. His clothes, his bitch tits, his dance moves, his face in general. Poor Phil Mickelson. Just another normal day on Twitter, all things considered, though. We shall see you tomorrow between 6 and 9. Have an excellent day in the company of CliffCentral.com.
This is CliffCentral.com.